Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 15th of January. Coming up in just a moment, we are trying to track her down right now. We hope to be speaking with Laura Kamm, who's the senior advisor for the Israel Project. The project is an international nonprofit organization that is devoted to educating the press and the public about Israel while promoting security, freedom, and peace. It provides journalists and opinion makers information about Israel, and it is not related to any government or government agency. Of course, there is news each day from Gaza. Israeli forces shelled areas deep inside Gaza's city on Thursday, hitting the headquarters of the United Nations Relief and Works Agency. And the United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon has expressed strong protest and outrage to Israel over the shelling of the UN compound. He was in Israel on Thursday to promote a ceasefire, saying that Israeli Defense Minister Ehud Barak had told him the strike on the compound was a grave mistake. There is also news that Egypt and Hamas are close to a deal for a 10-day ceasefire between Israel and the Palestinian group in Gaza, where the death toll from the Israeli offensive has exceeded 1,000, officials said. And Egyptian and Hamas officials have expressed optimism that an agreement for a temporary halt in fighting could be sealed soon and presented to Israel. But even if all sides sign on, further talks will be needed to resolve the disputes over policing Gaza's borders and to ensure a longer-term truce. There were news reports this morning that there will be attempts to have a ceasefire before the inauguration of President-elect Barack Obama on Tuesday. We'll be talking about that, all of that, as soon as we are able to secure our guest, who is not with us at the moment. We did have an email yesterday, and just to let you know that we have different sides of issues on different days, not always together. An email, as a regular listener, she found yesterday's 9 a.m. program to be entirely one-sided and totally inflammatory. Yesterday's guest was Faraz Jerjes, who had just returned from the Middle East and teaches at Sarah Lawrence College. Our email writer said Hamas is not a social movement. It is a hateful, fanatic, vengeful, dangerous entity committed to the destruction of Israel. And so we will tell her that I told her that we do have a different opinion on today, and we will get our guest's today response to whether or not that's an accurate description of Hamas. We do have our guest with us now, which is terrific, and we'll be welcoming phone calls for Laura Kamm, senior advisor to the project that we were talking about. She meets regularly as part of the Israel Project with top politicians, diplomats, and think tanks across Europe, the United Kingdom, Israel, and the United States. She is head of the Iran and European projects and manages the delivery of information in six languages to some 76,000 journalists and opinion makers across the globe. She worked for the Anti-Defamation League for 17 years, including as co-director of the ADL's Israel office, where she met regularly with leading Israeli and Middle East officials and policymakers. She has expertise on Iran and international terrorism, teaches pro-Israel advocacy, and has worked as a press officer at the Israeli consulate in New York. Our phone number for you to join the conversation today is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Should you care to send us an email, you can do that, and that is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Laura, good morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
You're very welcome. Good morning.
Let's talk with the possibility of a 10-day ceasefire. News reports of that yesterday between Israel and the Palestinian Hamas group in Gaza. Do you think that's a possibility? The other word this morning on the news is there are hopes that it will happen before the presidential inauguration on Tuesday.
There definitely are hopes for a ceasefire. Senior Israeli officials are in Egypt and in the United States right now negotiating or trying to deal with wording of a ceasefire.
Mm-hmm. Tell me how you would describe the organization Hamas and what Israel's goals are in Gaza right now in terms of dealing with Hamas.
I would describe Hamas as an extremist, fundamentalist Islamist terrorist organization who refuses to recognize Israel's right to exist.
And the goal of the current campaign in Gaza then would be what?
Well, it's Their goal was to hit Israeli civilians to force Israel and Egypt, I think, to deal with it as a rational actor. And they say that they want their border crossings opened, but that was the reason that the checkpoints or border crossings were closed, was because Hamas was smuggling in rockets that were hitting Israeli civilians. And whenever Israel tried to bring in humanitarian aid, which it has many times, on many occasions, Hamas itself would perpetrate terrorist attacks on the checkpoints while they were open, bringing in humanitarian aid, cynically hurting their own populations.
Mm-hmm. So would the goal be to reduce this to a totally ineffective organization, or is there another goal?
I'm not sure of your question.
Hamas, is the goal to...
Israel's goal?
Yes.
I think that Israel does not see Hamas as a rational actor here. But I think the main number one goal of Israel right this minute is to stop rockets hitting its civilian population.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, that is exactly why this whole event, this whole horrible event, which is extremely painful to the Jewish community, I think, you know, feeling democratic people everywhere, as well as Israelis, is that Hamas broke a ceasefire that Israel really wanted to keep holding. And they broke the ceasefire, and they just started lobbing hundreds of missiles into Israel. On Christmas Day alone, 60 missiles hit Israeli civilian towns and villages. So, yes, this is all about having Hamas simply stop shelling Israeli towns, villages, schools, stores, etc.
Mm-hmm. The news, as you know, today that Israeli forces hit the headquarters of the United Nations Relief and Works Agency. The UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon has expressed strong protest and outrage to Israel over the shelling of this compound, saying that this, and then we had Israeli Defense Minister Ehud Barak saying that the strike was a grave mistake. Your response to all of that, to the United Nations Secretary General comments and the grave mistake?
A few things. First of all, I do agree with the Secretary General that when civilians are harmed, it's really horrible and grievous. The Defense Minister, Ehud Barak, did come out with an apology, but his apology had an explanation, and I think that that's extremely important to understand, that Hamas is using Palestinian civilians as human shields. They're shooting at Israeli soldiers extremely close from these very UN facilities. And they're doing that, again, in an extremely cynical way. And the IDF is going to respond to shooting at them from no matter where it comes. Now, the fact is that UNRWA has been extremely negligent. UNRWA is the UN Works and Relief Agency, and this building was part of UNRWA. And they have been very negligent and indifferent in terms of their associations with Hamas. That is, they've hired Hamas militants and terrorists to work at UNRWA facilities, and then these terrorists store materials there that fight or that fight Israeli soldiers. So Hamas is on the UNRWA payroll. UNRWA schools are teaching hate. They're teaching anti-Semitism and anti-Israel hatred in their schools. And so this is much, much more complicated than it would seem to be from the naked eye.
Mm-hmm. What about not letting journalists into this area? What are the thoughts behind that? The journalists have expressed concern about this.
Well, I understand right now that indeed the BBC and Fox are embedded with Israeli forces, and Israel, I believe, is about to let in more and more journalists. The reason why they didn't let in journalists, the Israeli government has been saying, is because they did not want to be responsible for their well-being. That it's a very Gaza is a very small area. There's an intense amount of fighting going on, and I think they felt that it was clear that if journalists were in there running around unsupervised, they were going to be killed.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about Hillary Clinton for a moment. In her hearings for confirmation as Secretary of State on Tuesday, she said that she is calling for a smart power strategy in the Middle East. How do you read that, and what are your thoughts about the new administration taking some kind of major role in trying to broker a peace?
Yeah, well, clearly the United States is going to have to be dealing with what's happening on the ground in the Middle East, even though I'm sure they really want to focus on the economic crisis that has engulfed the United States. They won't be able to get away from this, and I think it's important that the United States is seen as an honest broker in dealing with the Middle East. There will be some changes, clearly. Barack Obama and now Senator Clinton, or Secretary of State designate Clinton, has spoken out forcefully about the need to speak to some of America's and Israel's gravest enemies, and in that I mean Iran, which, by the way, is supporting Hamas lock, stock, and barrel. They do want to speak with Iran about its nuclear weapons program. And I think that you can't separate what is happening in the Middle East in terms of Hamas, Hezbollah, and Syria without talking about Iran and where Iran is and its culpability in all of this.
And talk more about that. What is Iran's culpability?
Well, Iran is giving millions, tens of millions of dollars to Hamas. They are training Hamas militants and terrorists in Tehran. We know that. They are, besides giving training and direct funds, they are ideologically behind where Hamas is at. That is, both Iran and Hamas refuse to believe that Israel has a right to exist.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is where much of the ideology for the continued fighting is coming from. Both Hamas and Tehran don't believe in the Holocaust. They talk about how Jews came from apes and monkeys, unbelievably anti-Semitic, unbelievably anti-West, believe that all of the West is that there needs to be a new regime in the world, and that regime needs to be focused on Islam, and particularly their brand of Islam, and anybody who doesn't believe that is an apostate, a crusader, and needs to be fought with until the end.
The new administration has talked about having diplomatic or using the diplomacy route for dealing with Iran. Do you think that's possible?
Look, I think they're going to try. Clearly, they believe that the last 8 years of dealing with Iran has not been helpful. And indeed, Iran is now extraordinarily close to completion of a nuclear weapon. So Barack Obama and Secretary of State designate Clinton have said on numerous occasions that a nuclear Iran is just something that is not going to happen as far as they're concerned, that a nuclear Iran would be a danger not only to Israel and the whole Middle East, including the Gulf states, but also to the West and the United States in particular. So their vision right now is to talk to the Iranians and explain to them that as far as they're concerned, as things stand, a nuclear Iran is just not going to be a possibility. And I think they want to talk about carrots and sticks as ways to have Iran end its nuclear weapons program.
We're going to welcome phone calls. Our guest this hour is Laura Kam, Senior Advisor for the Israel Project, an international nonprofit organization devoted to educating us, the press, the public, about Israel while promoting security, freedom, and peace. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. 8655. We have a couple lines open right now if you'd like to secure one. And you can also send emails. That address is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up the second hour of our program this Thursday, the author of Born to be Good, The Science of a Meaningful Life. Let's go to phone calls now for Laura Kamm, Senior Advisor for the Israel Project. Our phone number, 800-486-8655. And Jerry from Madison is our first caller. Hi, Jerry.
Good morning, Kathleen. I've heard in news reports that over 1,000 civilians have been killed in Gaza in the last couple of weeks during the Israeli invasion. My question is, how many Israelis were killed by the Hamas rockets into Israel prior to the invasion?
Okay, first of all, what the IDF, the Israel Defense Forces, is saying right now is that 1,000 people have been killed in Gaza in the last several weeks, and only a quarter of them, not only, because any civilian life is horrible, but about 250 of them have been civilians, and the rest of them have been Hamas militants. So coming out with the statement of saying 1,000 civilians have been killed is simply untrue. In Israel, I believe that about 15 civilians have been killed. Just since the fighting alone has started, 3 Israeli civilians have been killed and 10 Israeli soldiers have been killed.
And do you think that it makes sense to frame this in terms of the number of civilians killed on each side?
Yeah, I think that's an excellent question, and it's a question that has been debated significantly. There's been this whole issue of disproportionality. Mm-hmm. This is what I would say. If Israel, I'll give you a couple of examples. If Israel was going to be proportional, then Israel would only be firing at Palestinian civilian targets, because that is exactly what Hamas is doing. Hamas is only firing at civilians. That is not what Israel is about. Israel is not about harming civilians. Israel is about protecting its citizens. And I would dare say that if Canada was lobbing missiles into the northern United States, there would be a response. And I'm wondering if, 60 rockets in one day. And by the way, since Israel left the Gaza Strip in 2005, totally left, all their soldiers, all their farms, all their schools, all their civilians just left in the hopes of building a Palestinian state with the Palestinian Authority and really beginning that two-state solution process. Mm-hmm. 6,500 rockets have been fired at Israel. I wonder if 3 rockets were fired at the United States from Canada, what the response would be. I would dare say it would not be 3 rockets back.
Did you have something else, Jerry?
Well, just on another note, much has been made about the Arab refusal to recognize the state of Israel, and I'm just wondering if Israel has a policy guaranteeing the survival of the Palestinian state.
Well, Israel has been involved in a Palestinian, a two-state solution, particularly for several years now. Part of leaving Gaza was that the whole Annapolis process several years ago was just about trying to work out a two-state solution. And indeed, up until right now, Israel has been involved in negotiations with Mahmoud Abbas, the president of the Palestinian Authority, trying to work out a deal for a two-state solution. A two-state solution is what the Israeli people want. It's what the Palestinians want. It is what the West wants. And that is where we all want to be. Hamas, however, does not believe in a two-state solution. Hamas does not believe that Israel has the right to exist. And in fact, let me just say that Hamas and the Palestinian Authority are also engaged in battle and in cold blood during the last 2 weeks. Hamas killed 80 Hamas killed 80 Palestinian Authority fighters, Fatah fighters in Gaza.
Thanks, Jerry, very much for your call. Let's go to Scott from Green Bay next. Hi, Scott.
Good morning. I guess I have two questions. The first one is how do you, where's the starting point? I mean, if you sit to negotiate with Hamas and the person across from you does not believe that you should exist, where is the starting point? How do you negotiate peace with an organization that just not believe you should exist? That's question number one. And question number two is, and I'm just curious, the lobbing of missiles has been going on for quite some time now, and we never hear about that. We do hear about the Israeli response, but we don't hear. What is the fascination with the left when it comes to the love of Palestine and the Palestinians? Because Western society, in the United States especially, definitely you hear it's pro-Palestinian more than it is pro-Israeli. I mean, you hear an uproar with the reaction to Israel's response, but we've never heard for how many years that, you know, Hamas has been lobbing Katyusha rockets at,
right,
at Israel. I don't understand. Where's the disconnect?
Well, let me start with your second question. I think the reason that we haven't heard about it so much is not for lack of trying on the Israeli side, or indeed on my organization's side, the Israel Project, where we try to educate journalists in the fact that this has been happening to Israeli civilians. Basically, if it bleeds, it leads. That is, because there have been not a lot of bloodshed on the Israeli side, it hasn't been in the press. This doesn't mean that hundreds of thousands of Israelis have not been traumatized and literally living in horrible conditions. That is, when these missiles come over, a siren goes off in Israel. And then you have about 15 seconds to gather your family and run into the bomb shelter that every apartment building in Israel has. Now, let's say you have three children, and you only have 15 seconds to get down to the bomb shelter. You might not have time to grab all three of those kids. What do? Let's say you have an elderly parent, and you need to get that parent and your children into the bomb shelter, and you know you only have 15 seconds. Or let's think about how you're afraid to take a shower because you're in the shower and the siren goes off, and what do? You're in the shower. How do you get down to the bomb shelter? So it's true that there has not been a tremendous amount of bloodshed, although Israelis have been killed and have been maimed, and you know, homes and businesses have been destroyed. But the trauma that Israelis have been living under since these missiles started has really been intense. But again, in our media here, if it bleeds, it leads. On your first question about how do you talk to Hamas? Well, Israel is not talking directly to Hamas, and neither is the United States. And frankly, both the United States and all 28 countries of the European Union consider Hamas a terrorist organization and will not talk to it. However, Egypt is being the intermediary here to work out a ceasefire. So what the United States said, and what Hillary Clinton said the other day during her confirmation hearings, is that there are three conditions for America, and I think Israel believes those three conditions as well. The three conditions for talking to Hamas are that Hamas recognizes Israel's right to exist, Hamas stops terror, and Hamas abides by all the agreements that were made already between Israel and the Palestinian Authority. And if Hamas agreed to those three conditions, I think then there could be discussions.
Thanks very much for the call. Yesterday we had Fawaz Jurjis on the show. I'm sure you're familiar with him. Let me ask you to respond to this that he has written. Israel's brutal and disproportionate use of force in Lebanon in 2006 and now in Gaza shows the failure of its deterrence and the damage to its moral standing in the world. Killing large numbers of Palestinians and Arabs will not bring Israel security and will only deepen hatred of Israel among Arabs, even Christian Arabs and Muslims throughout the world. If not stopped, it may foil even the best intentions for a two-state solution. What do you make of that?
I think, again, the civilian casualties and civilian damage that has happened in Lebanon in 2006 and now in Gaza is really grievous. Again, with Hezbollah in Lebanon, that was not a war that Israel started. Israel has absolutely no territorial issues with Lebanon. The border was quiet, and Hezbollah decided to kidnap three Israeli soldiers. And by the way, we shouldn't forget that there is an Israeli soldier that is being held in Gaza right now, and the International Red Cross was never able to see him, and it is unclear how he is or his whereabouts. Let me say this. An interesting point that needs to be made is that you don't see Arab leaders coming out in favor of Hamas right now.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see Egypt, Jordan, Saudi Arabia, any of the Gulf states, any of the major players coming out and giving Hamas support. And you also see that Hezbollah has remained extremely quiet on this whole issue also. That is, I don't think that the Arab world is particularly thrilled with where Hamas is going. Again, there is a process for a two-state solution. People want to see that happening. And I don't think that your speaker yesterday is on the right track at all. I think his analysis is way off.
Saeed is next from Green Bay. Hi, Saeed.
Thank you very much for taking my call. I wanted to talk about the role of Iran in this crisis. And when we talk about civilian casualties, we have to put in context the tactics that are used by Hezbollah and Hamas in comparison to an offshoot of similar tactics that were used by the Khomeinis in Iran in their ascent to power. The creation of civilian casualties is, in fact, their objective. Who can forget the events of the Rex Cinema Theater in Iran, where the Khomeinis burned 700 people alive to their death in order to create sentiment against the government? If you want to understand the full extent of this, go to YouTube and search for anti-Semitism for children. And there you will see programming like Sesame Street for children. And when I watched this to see what children in Iran are being exposed to, I lost all hope for the possibility of peace in generations to come. The Iranian threat here is very, very significant. And in comparison, for example, to Osama bin Laden and the efforts that now the new Obama administration is going to have with escalating our role in Afghanistan makes me think that the relative significance of these two is probably not fully appreciated. That is, the role of Iran in destabilizing the world is several orders of magnitude above what Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda represents, and that I hope that is well understood here. I've looked at the website of your organization and of the speaker's organization, and there's an outline of great strategies that can be followed by the West. One is the divestment program, which I think that we should really fully embrace. But one idea that has not been talked about in any of my encounters with people that recommend policy is that there is a very significant Iranian asset in the United States, the frozen Iranian assets that were present at the time of the revolution in 1979, these assets were frozen and maintained in American financial institutions. This represents the only Iranian national asset that has been protected from the Khomeini's regime. It is in the order of several hundred billion dollars. This money is a Iranian national treasure and should be released to the opposition forces that are trying to, through peaceful means and nonviolent resistance, replace the Khomeini's regime in Iran. Using this money can actually be a incentive to unify the Iranian opposition both inside and outside the country. These assets can be used, for example, to support when, for example, the Tehran city bus drivers went on strike. It could help to support their families. When the Iranian teachers went on strike, when the 1 million signature movement in Iran, where women are standing up asking for their rights and being imprisoned and tortured, it can be helped to support the their families. It can help to pay for lawyers, to human rights lawyers, to represent the interests of these families.
All right, let's get a response here because we have a lot of people who want to speak.
Okay.
Thank you, Saeed. Laura.
Yes, Saeed, I totally agree with just about everything you said. First of all, I appreciate you mentioning our website, www.theisraelproject.org. Indeed, we do have many strategies for dealing with Iran and Israel's enemies in terms of giving people the facts that they need to know when they're making decisions about what side to come down on or just to understand the situation. Iran teaches hatred, and let's not forget that Iran gave keys to tens of thousands of children to fight Iraq, keys around them to heaven when the children were sent across minefields during the Iran-Iraq war. So this is exactly the kind of regime that we're dealing with, and we did talk about Iran earlier. Indeed, there are divestment efforts in the United States to try to weaken the Iranian regime, and people should look at whether their portfolios, if people have portfolios anymore, are supporting financial institutions or companies that trade with Iran. The United States right now is looking, and we are pushing very strong financial sanctions throughout Europe and across the world. We want to see an Iran without a nuclear weapon, without a war. And we think that the only way to do that is for countries around the world to stop doing business with the Iranian regime.
Thanks, Saeed, for the call. We have an email that's come in just a little bit more on Iran. Mm-hmm. Hamas is a Sunni-based organization, Iran primarily a Shiite country.
That's right.
With these differences in mind, how closely linked are Hamas and Iran?
Right. Well, you know, amazingly enough, somehow when it comes to the destruction of Israel and the murder of Jews, the Sunni-Shiite divide is able to be whitewashed. So you're right. This is a phenomenon that indeed a Shiite country is supporting a Sunni terrorist group, but that is exactly what we have here.
Let's go to Dana from Madison next. Hi, Dana.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. How are you?
I just kind of wanted to comment on I feel that what's going on over there is really tragic, and I kind of had a question. And that was, since I've been following this ordeal, I noticed that Hamas was the initial attacker by launching rockets into Israel. And I can understand how Israel felt that they needed to respond with militaristic actions. But my question is, what they're doing right now, I mean, could there be an alternative way that they could respond militaristically without so many innocent deaths? And I guess that's my question. I don't really know exactly what's going on over there. And because I just feel that, I mean, it's just unexcusable how many innocent people have died on the Palestinian side.
Well, I think that it is, in a sense, inexcusable. I agree with you. But I think the blame for that needs to go on Hamas. Hamas embeds its military hardware inside the civilian population, which, by the way, is considered a war crime. That is, what we see are Hamas rocket battalions and the storage of military equipment inside schools, inside people's houses, inside hospitals, and indeed UNRWA, UN facilities, or very, very close by. And they do that in a very cynical way, as the caller right before said, because in a sense, they welcome civilian casualties, because what happens is that it makes Israel look bad, or it makes the West look bad, and it gives them another reason to fight. Israel, you know, sat on its hands for years now just because of this, just because they did not want so many civilian casualties, because they knew Gaza is a very small space, and it would be very, very hard. So what has Israel been doing? They've been dropping leaflets in neighborhoods that they know that they're going to have military actions in, asking people to flee. Israel has the cell phone numbers of everybody that lives in Gaza, and they've been calling and text messaging Gazan civilians, telling them to flee. I mean, I don't think there's any other country in the world that would go to such great lengths to not have military, to not have civilian casualties. And there have been times when Israeli pilots have seen, for example, they were going to bomb an installation. They've seen civilians there, and they aborted their own missions. Really, this has been something that has been on the minds of Israeli civilians and Israeli military planners, and Israel has been doing everything that it could possibly do in its power, not to harm civilians, but again, if Hamas places its military equipment inside civilian homes, it's going to be a problem.
Thanks very much for the call. It was an interesting piece I'm sure you saw in the New York Times, I think the day before yesterday, Laura, that asked the question why there are not very many demonstrations within Israel, and there usually are quite a few demonstrations, that the support for what's going on in Gaza is very, very strong in Israel right now.
Right. I read it's about 80% of the Israeli people I wouldn't say feel comfortable because they're saddened, but they had it with, listen, a million Israelis are basically under threat of rocket fire, and the rockets that are being used have a longer and longer range. So there really is a limit to how long Israel's civilian population, or a sixth of its population, is under rocket fire. Again, is living through that trauma of having 15 seconds to get into a bomb shelter. It's been happening since 2005. It's increased significantly in the past several months when it was clear that Hamas did not want to continue with the ceasefire. And there's just a limit. And again, if think about you as an American, you know, sitting in Wisconsin and, you know, having rockets rain down on your children's school from Canada. I don't think you'd be so happy about that.
More phone calls in a moment. Laura Kam is our guest, and we're talking with her about what's going on with Israel and Gaza. She is the senior advisor for the Israel Project, and she manages the delivery of information in many languages to journalists and opinion makers across the globe. She worked for the Anti-Defamation League for 17 years before this work, where she was in co-director of the ADL's Israel office, meeting with Israeli and Middle East officials and policymakers. Our phone number, our lines are busy right now, but keep the number in mind, 800-486-8655. Email address is talk@wpr.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Following the news from National Public Radio at 10 o'clock, the author of Born to be Good, The Science of a Meaningful Life. Let's go back to phone calls for Laura Kam. And our next caller is Robert from Manitowoc. Hi, Robert.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
There's something I don't understand about Gaza. Didn't the people in Gaza vote Hamas into office here a year ago or 2 years ago or 5 years ago? And I don't see if they – I'm positive they did. And if they did – then we should just bomb the daylights out of all of Gaza until the people wake up and say, hey, Hamas is no good for us. We got to get rid of them. I guess that's all I have.
Yes. It is true that there were parliamentary elections in January 2006, and Hamas did win, and there was a power sharing with the Palestinian Authority, or Fatah. In June 2007, however, Hamas forces routed Abbas loyalists in a week of bloody fighting in Gaza. And then Fatah, or the president of Palestine's forces, lost all power in the Gaza Strip. That is, there wasn't a power sharing anymore. And it was really since then that things really ratcheted up with Israel. That is, since there was no Palestinian authority in the Gaza Strip. And let me just say that during that siege in June, Hamas killed 161 Palestinians, their own brethren, and wounded at least 700 others. So, yes, you're right. Yes, I think that sometimes good people make bad choices. And this was a bad choice.
Thank you, Robert, very much for your call. Abdul is next from Milwaukee. Hello, Abdul.
Hey. Yes, how you doing? Yeah, I like to comment about the 2 million people dying in Palestine. Why now? They talk about over 500 women and kids die right now. And she's trying to tell everybody there's no only 200 million dying in Palestine. All people dying over there is just like regular people, just like us. I think what Israel do in Gaza right now is a criminal. Everybody knows. The problem over here in the United States, people don't really see what's going on. They don't really watch TV. The TV you saw down here, they don't saw anything about it. But when you look at the other TV from different countries, you see the picture. Everybody knows what's going on. Gaza was occupied by Israel for 40 years right now. And they tell them what to do. They tell them you cannot fly, go nowhere. You don't have no airport. You don't have nothing for yourself. Hamas people, they fight for their life. They just fight for their life. I'm an African. We were colonized by, Europeans. And we know what's going on about occupying somebody's land. That's happened. Israel just occupied Gaza. That's what they did. And right now, they're killing people, and they're trying to justify that? No. You guys cannot justify those people dying right now. There's no way you can justify that. But thank you.
Thank you, Abdul, for your call. Laura.
Yeah. First of all, I think that Americans are aware of this conflict. It has been all over the TV in the last 2 weeks. Now it's less so because the media is focusing much more significantly on the inauguration. But we did a poll just the other day, and we found a large majority of Americans do know about this conflict, and they're getting their information from TV. Interestingly enough, let me just say that two-thirds of Americans blame Hamas leaders for what's happening there. They blame Hamas leaders for the current humanitarian crisis in Gaza. And 80% of Americans want to work hard to stop Iran, both to get nuclear weapons and support Hamas. So I think what we're seeing is great knowledge amongst Americans, and I think Americans have a very good understanding about what is happening there.
And what's your take on the media coverage, particularly television coverage? Do you think it is fair, Laura, in the States?
I think that it has been fairer than other conflicts have in the past. I think that there, again, I think it's been okay. I think Americans understand what's going on, and I think that journalists that are there understand what's going on. Frankly, I think what's going to happen is that there will be a ceasefire, I hope and pray, very soon. Gaza will be opened up to the world media. I think the world is going to see a tremendous amount of destruction there. And, you know, I think that it's going to be somewhat shocking, but and I think it's going to be up to, you know, Israeli spokespeople and organizations like mine to explain to the media and to the public that the reason that this happened was because Hamas pushed Israel so far. And that we wish it wouldn't, but I believe that what is going to happen is that very, very soon after Gaza is open, Israel is going to be involved in bringing Gazans into Israeli hospitals for treatment, for bringing in tremendous more amounts of humanitarian aid. That is, I know that the Israelis are already working with the Palestinian Authority and Europeans to figure out how right away the civilians that have been harmed could be helped.
Thank you, Abdul, for your call. Doug is next from Wauwatosa. Hi, Doug.
Oh, hi. Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
It seems that even on the Israeli website, the Ministry of Foreign Affairs website, it admits that Israel broke the ceasefire by going into Gaza, killing 6 or 7 Palestinian militants. At that point, Hamas retaliated. So that part of the story isn't getting out. To say that the American people are well educated on this is really beyond belief. Also, the newspaper Haaretz in Israel also has a problem with some of the things that occurred as well. I think the main reason that this occurred was that Hamas actually wanted to return to the 1967 borders, and Israel just wanted to go in even before the ceasefire agreement was initiated. And also, there was a 10,000-person demonstration in Tel Aviv against what Israel is doing right now in Gaza. So to say the entire population is behind this, or to say that Israel really is not at fault here, I think is part of the reason why the American people are so underserved in terms of information in this instance.
Yes, on I know exactly what you're talking about. On November 4th, the Israeli military attacked a Hamas target, and 6 members of Hamas's military wing were killed. And that is because there were rockets coming into Israel in September and October, and there was a tremendous amount of smuggling of weapons coming through Egypt. And these weapons that were being smuggled through tunnels were posing a threat to Israel's southern population. So it wasn't that Israel broke the truce. Rockets were being fired on Israel. It wasn't 60 a day, but it was rockets being fired on Israel, and I don't know why one rocket fired into Israeli civilian territory is okay. That is the true breaking of the ceasefire.
And thank you, Doug, very much for the call. Scott is next from Eau Claire. Hi, Scott.
Hi, thank you. I just quick comment about an earlier caller had brought up the disproportionality of civilian casualties, and I think it's important for people to realize that the reason for it is that Israel has installed a huge system of early warning systems and above-ground bomb shelters so that they know when rockets are fired, and they are protecting their population. Conversely, you have Hamas with military installations within their own civilian population showing complete disregard for their people, and that's the reason for the disproportionality. You can't blame Israel for protecting their own people. And that's it. Thank you.
Thank you for the call, Laura.
Well, I couldn't say it better myself. I think that it's very telling that while Hamas has spent millions and millions of dollars on rockets, they have not built bomb shelters for their own people. So I think your caller's point is extremely well taken.
And thanks very much for the call. Are you at all hopeful? You know, I was thinking every time we do a show like this, I think about how long we've talked about this, Laura, and you've been talking about it for a long time as well.
I'm First of all, one needs to be hopeful. I am hopeful that there will be a two-state solution in the future where Palestinian and Israeli children are safe and can learn and can know each other, and that both peoples, the Palestinians and the Israelis, can live in dignity in their own countries and become members, you know, and, well, Israel already is, and that the Palestinians can have their own state and be a member of the League of Nations. That really is my hope, and I hope it can happen. I know that most Palestinians want that. I really do believe that, and they've been kind of hijacked by this militant terrorist organization that is terrorizing not only the Israelis, but their own people. Mm.
Laura, thanks so much for being with us. I appreciate your time today.
You're welcome.
Laura Kam, Senior Advisor for the Israel Project, international nonprofit organization. And thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour, to Rob Schroeder for on-air production here in Milwaukee, and thanks for all of your calls. News is coming up, and we'll return here on the Ideas Network.